Very good morning. Do I cut you off as well?
I'm not answering, Howard.
Only because I won't let you. So Luba, before we get on to political talk, see, we were talking to David about family rituals, family, I don't know, get-togethers over this weekend, whether you're celebrating Pesach or you're celebrating Easter. What are your traditions?
Howard, I'm a work in progress when it comes to that, because remember, I grew up with one sibling, so right. Big families weren't my kind of thing, and David will probably laugh. They made me very nervous, so I had just one sibling, and so remember, I grew up in boarding school, so I'd be in school, then for Easter, June, and September, December, I was at home. So we never really had big gatherings, and as I grew older and got married, I found them very uncomfortable, in the sense that I'd suddenly find myself at my mom-in-law's with 20 or 30 people. So, yeah, I'm getting used to them. You know, I've been to a few Pesach Seders. I've enjoyed them. But in the Christian context, you don't generally have around Easter that kind of big family thing. That would usually occur during December. But as I've said before, my dad was a strange one. He had this policy. He says, never visit people because they might feel obliged to visit you back. so if that helps, we didn't really visit people. So he would always say, what do you want to do? You want to go to the beach? I'll take you there. You want to go for a hike up the mountain? I'll take you there. But as a child, I didn't grow up going to visit other kids. And we didn't certainly. I mean, look, he had six siblings. I only found out in January he had six. I thought he had five. But I can't recall ever meeting three of those siblings. And I met two 2 years before he died, and then at his funeral, and that's the last I ever saw of them.
Incredible, hey? Unbelievable.
So it was never really that issue, but I I've had to work very hard at it, to be really comfortable with lots of people, because you see, in the African context, you descend in my mother-in-law's house, there are more people than there are rooms to sleep in. And all of that. So for me, coming from a small family, it was very uncomfortable, because having to share sleeping, you know, a bed and all of those things was not what I was used to. So I would generally avoid them. And if I had to go, I'd be as grumpy as hell. And my wife would keep telling me, thaw up, you know, you got to loosen up and you got to talk to people. And, so it was difficult. I liked rugby, they liked soccer, and I couldn't relate to soccer. And so, yeah, it was difficult. And I enjoyed the odd drink, and nobody in the place drinks. So, yeah. so mine was
that sounds like hell.
I endured them.
Yeah, but that's funny that you, look, I've been told that very often by my wife, there were certain people I'm not even allowed to make eye contact with. That's how strict it became at one point for me, that I wasn't allowed to look at certain people and, you know, and make eye contact with them because too much communication was happening there.
Doesn't that put pressure though? Because I often get that when my wife will say, smile a bit more, you know, don't talk too much and talk.
Right. No. I'm constantly. Look.
And it's scripted. And I'm like, honestly, do I need a flight plan for this thing? Because I'm being scripted. I'm getting nudged. So you know what I usually do? If my wife gives me a look, I say, honey, are you trying to tell me something?
And you and me. Well, I've got this terrible habit. I can't help it. When I get kicked under the table.
You say, ouch.
No, I go, why are you kicking me? And I'm trying. I'm working so hard just to try and be a bit more subtle. But
I can't. You know, also when I'm dragged to a place that I don't particularly want to go, and my wife says, you know, can you try and put a smile on your face? And I say, you know what? I'm coming with you. Do I have to be happy as well? You know, you didn't say that. You didn't actually say that I had to go and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
You know, but no, I mean, the truth is that, that I do generally have my own best time wherever I go. So that's also
right. You bring your own party with you, huh?
Exactly. Exactly right.
I think there's a place for them, and I've come to enjoy them a bit more, but my natural instinct is not to be, you know, it's around a group I've scripted myself. So if I'm being thrust into a group that I didn't put together, part of me is still a little bit uncomfortable.
That's a control thing that you were talking about.
That. What am I going to talk about? Who am I sitting next to? And all of those issues.
But don't you think it's important for your children to have a ritual over, let's say, an Easter weekend?
We do have a ritual, but that tends to be more around the end of the year. And look, at the moment, we've got the two oldest, 20 and 24, and the other one's younger. So you can bully the younger ones into the ritual. The older ones kind of then do their own thing. So we have tried to put that in place. But you see, I think the challenge for us is trying to mix a traditional African culture with something more Western. Mm. And then you know, two kids having gone to a Jewish day school and then trying to somehow make sense of Christianity and Judaism at the same time. So it does lend to a very curious mixture. I mean, look, we do have a meal on Friday. All our meals are at the table, so nobody sits with a tray in front of the TV or upstairs. Sure. So we always sit as a family around the table. And so Shabbat is always around the table and all of that. So when we do have bigger groups, look, my wife is very specific. She sits the people. I don't get involved. Remember, in our culture, there's certain chairs. So I have a chair at home that nobody sits in. And that's just our culture. So my wife will sit people accordingly, and between her and the girls, that's their job. And you better sit where you were told to sit.
Absolutely. That is really, really, but it's so interesting because it's, David, it's the same dynamic, really, no matter which religion, no matter what you observe. It's just, it's family, it's getting together, it's social dynamics. It really doesn't differ from place to place, does it?
Well, people are people. I mean, I think we bring a little bit of flavor, you know, it's, you know, and that's the only difference is, you know, what's the flavor, but the dynamics, as you say, they play out everywhere. Right. You know, I remember at university, having the privilege of having just by chance many Greek people in my year.
Right.
And we used to, Jewish,
well, the similarities.
The similarities is amazing. But again, the same dynamics, but just with different flavors.
Right.
You know, though, Howard, the one curious thing, though, that I've mentioned to you before, it's more around the eating, especially when it's a buffet. In the Western culture, you often have the kids and women dish out first. In the African culture, that's a no-no. The men will go and dish out first, and then the wives, and then the kids, and that's the order. And whoever is home that is will dish out first, period. So we often have a fight about this thing, because I'll be busy with something, my wife will say, can you please dish out your plate so that other people can go. Even if my mother is visiting, she cannot dish out her food before I have. So even though she's my mother, but she has to, you know, worry after me. So you've got to just understand those rules. So it becomes quite interesting when you've got a mixed table and with different races and religion, because people don't often understand that.
So do you verbalize it? How do you explain it? Do you realize? I mean, sometimes we don't realize that what happens in our home. I mean, you obviously do because you've just said so. But sometimes we don't recognize that what happens in our home or in our religion might differ to somebody else's. So what do you do? Do you verbalize it, or do you just do people just kind of fall in line?
Look, if it's all Africans, they will know that. So generally what you tend to do with the mixed group is my wife will often say, Lube, can you please go to the shot? And then she'll call the men. And so she won't say, this is the rule. She'll just say it to the husbands. She'll call them my name and say, guys, can you go and dish out so that we can also dish out? So it's not said so in an overt manner, but you can read between the lines that she's addressed the men and say, look, guys, you need to go and dish out food. So, I mean, if people break that, it's not a big issue. Mm. But the sitting arrangements are. I mean, I know now you'll be told, please move from that chair. So, if you're sitting in the husband's chair in that particular household, you will be moved. That one I can assure you.
It's very different in the Luba, I'm sure you've been to a few simchas, and I think, Howard, correct me if I'm wrong, the rule is the faster you are, the more
buffet. It's all about agility and strength.
And
speed. Yeah.
And then the other thing is bring, if there's no seating arrangements, which sometimes they're not, is bring as many personal items as you can to put them on the chair to reserve them for family members that might be coming. So it's interesting, because I think if, people could be offended by that, you know, Luba, the tradition in your family, in your culture, it's very different in kind of the Jewish tradition, I suppose. Obviously, from household to household, it might be different, but certainly.
Well, it's frowned upon, and we'll laugh. I mean, I often see guys who dislike they're going on a war march for the next month, and people will generally kind of give you the odd look. So you generally don't dish too much. it's acceptable to go for a second helping, but to come to the table with a plate that's laden, like, you know, with a mountain, will raise eyebrows. Oh. So the view is rather dish a reasonable portion, oh, come and sit down and eat, and
or
then
two plates.
Yeah.
Luba, so we were chatting about a ritual. The one subject, and we've only really got 5 minutes, but the one subject that I really did want to ask you about, not related to this issue, is we've been having a lot of conversations, certainly in studio, about the marketing campaigns of the various political parties. My sense, and certainly a conversation we've also again had in studio, is that many of the parties are not accurately understanding the mood of the country. What are your thoughts on it?
I think so. I mean, and one party in particular, I think the Democratic Alliance, I think people are looking for a positive message, a message that kind of gives them hope, and what we're seeing is very negative.
Yeah. And I mean, but the ANC, I mean, are they coming up with anything at all that is actually inspiring or makes us believe that they've changed direction?
I don't think anybody is coming up with a particularly positive message. I think the trouble for the ANC is that the president is doing really good things for the party. I mean, he's doing the usual meet and greet, kissing babies, he's going to preschool, sitting on the floor and talking with kids. So his message is certainly very positive in what he's saying. But the trouble is you've got guys like Ace in the background. So people are saying, yes, what you're saying is fantastic.
Sounds good,
and,
yeah.
And some of the video clips are saying that, you know, vote for us for a corruption-free government. But the problem is we're not seeing the action. Now, that's the ANC's fault, I think, never mind the spelling mistakes and everything else. But I think the trouble, when you go to the EFF and then you go to the DA, the messages, it's almost like people are competing to see, you know, how vile the messages can get. I mean, I was watching the DA video last night. It reminds me of...
Are you talking about that new advert when he walks through?
Yes.
Right.
And it's something like the game of cronies, you know, because you look at it and you say, it's a really... bad caricature of the country. Nothing in that video is working well. And never mind the optics that it's just almost exclusively black. And, you know, so you ask yourself, who's the DA targeting with that ad? A very specific community. But there's nothing positive about it. The DA doesn't even tell you what they will give you, what they will do. So it's kind of very gloomy. And it's very difficult to rally people around it. I took that and I shared it in one of my groups that I have on WhatsApp, and I said to the guys, what do you think? And the younger people said, look, this doesn't resonate with me at all. You know, I'm looking for somebody to inspire me, and this doesn't. This is just very negative. I know what's gone wrong in the country. You don't need to tell me. You don't need to make a video to tell me about it, but tell me what you're going to do. And I think that's where... I mean, we spoke about this a few weeks ago, Howard, but that part I'm missing. But for me, the funny thing, though, that I've noticed is that it almost mirrors in some regards the people in the parties. People are very, very touchy about any criticism of their parties, and that's become very strange. When I look on social media, I get bombarded. I mean, I've been called out by people. People have told me that they're young and I should engage them, you know, more openly. And I've just found that people have got those who are within the parties. I'm not talking of the ordinary voter who's out there, but those who have some deeper affiliation with their party are a lot more sensitive. You can't just post now and criticize validly something that sucks. People get offended.
Yeah. It's actually interesting. A couple of messages. One unsigned saying, look at the message of the ZACP. That's, of course, the capitalist party. I would love your thoughts on that. Neil says, no party has many born frees. No party is progressive. That's from Neil. And Unsigned says, as regard to the DA video, the previous DA referred to every religious group except the Jews. I didn't notice that it didn't refer to the Jews. But interesting. I found that video very powerful. I found it depressing, but very, very powerful.
I think it depends how you look at it, because you know, for me, for instance, as a black person, when I looked at that video, the first thing that struck me was the makeup of the people in the video. I saw maybe one or two white faces, and I said, why? And then, you know, it kind of played out in a township, in a Shebeen, and everything else like that. And I said, but is that South Africa? You know, are you targeting South Africans in a particular geographical area? Why not shoot the video and show the length and breadth of South Africa? I think that, I mean, I'm not trying to advocate for the ANC, but the challenge you often get is that if you say to a black person, go back to 1993 and to 2019, has your life changed? They'll tell you yes, tremendously in many ways. Have things gone wrong? Certainly. So I think for me, as a political tool, it's very depressing because I wouldn't live where I live right now were it not for democracy. So some things have gone very, very, very well. You know, and some things have gone wrong, but I think it just kind of takes all the things that have gone wrong, puts them together, but then, you know, puts them in a particular locality. You are walking through a township and you are dealing with a particular, group of people. To me, that I think was just a bit too heavy.
Right. And your thoughts on this, the ZACP? Have you followed that?
I don't know much about them.
Okay, so that's a fair comment, and I would prefer that you didn't comment.
I mean, there's lots like Gatvol Cape Townians. I mean, a lot of people have a very negative message, and you know, some being very nationalistic, and some being very territorial, and that is my problem. Is I still find the patriotism and unity is something that in South Africa we still grapple with. You know, everybody's kind of collating around a particular issue, and if you don't kind of belong or fit there, you are being squeezed and pushed out. And that's a worrying sign.
Absolutely, Luba Maiki. So that's where we leave it. Hope you have a fantastic Easter, fantastic weekend, and we will catch you next week. Actually, no. Yes, there is a normal show next week, same time, same place.